This is Remembering Kent State, 1970, an examination of the events leading to the shootings at Kent State. Up next, Monday, May 4th, 1970.
The following day, on Monday, got up early, went out on campus. The atmosphere was still very hostile.
In essence, if the term is meaningful to you, we're in a sense under martial law on this campus. The grave danger, and this is what I heard last night, a bunch of girls saying, well, my mommy said not to go down there, but boy, this is fun. Let's go on down. And this is the grave danger, the curiosity seekers moving into the rallies. There's one scheduled at 12 noon. Moving into the rallies, and when your head's busted, or when you're arrested, or when you're tear gassed, you have only yourself to blame. Nobody else.
Because there wasn't much learning going on. There wasn't much education happening. Every time I turned around, I was being frisked and searched by National Guard troops, and it wasn't a very pleasant situation being a student here.
I felt oppressed by this presence by the National Guard on campus, even though I knew a lot of these guys were like my age, and I knew that they were probably tired and weary and everything else. It just was a very dangerous situation that was brewing, and I was afraid that they were going to start beating people up. That's the worst I think was going to happen. The rumor was around that there was a lock and load situation on, that the guns were locked and unloaded.
At no time was the faculty ever informed by the university administration that the weapons were loaded.
I got a call about 10:30, and there were some other guard officers there that called my headquarters and said, General Canterbury's on his way over. The decision had been made that rally was one of those that would be banned, that it would not be held. In fact, a legal officer was already there from Columbus and had talked to the Attorney General about the legality of the Guard being there in that particular rally, and the General Canterbury had talked to General DeCorso and a couple of other officers from Columbus about...
A student came by at a luncheon meeting, and a student said, let's go to the rally, and I said, okay, and I said, maybe I better take my marshalling band, although we had essentially disbanded. So I took it and went out and stood above the hill, and the students were gathered around the Victory Bell, which is about 100 meters or 100 yards from the National Guard, who are standing around the burned-down ROTC building. So it was clearly a symbolic presentation on both sides.
As the noon hour approached, the crowd began to get larger, and there were ultimately about 1,500 of us there at noon. Finally, at one point, the student Ken Hammond got up on the Victory Bell at exactly noon, and he made a statement. He said, is it the feeling of the people here today that we should participate in the national student strike because of the invasion of Cambodia?
I don't think there ever was a rally. There was just a group of people standing around listening to somebody screaming at them in a bullhorn, and then the Ohio National Guard troops decided they were going to use their bullhorn and chase everybody away.
The chanting went on, and not much more than that initially, and that didn't upset anybody, didn't hurt anybody particularly. Guardsmen had heard it before. And we sent out a Kent Security Net person with a bullhorn in a Jeep to be sure that they could hear that. And the first pass that he made across the commons in front, they threw stones at him and jeered him and that sort of thing. But it did make a full sweep pass and came back. And again, we waited some more to see what would happen. And I think that, again, just helped probably focus the group some more. And the focus appeared to change from anti-Vietnam, anti-Cambodia, anti-Nixon to anti-Guard. And it was more pigs off campus, guards off campus. And that picked up in tempo.
They told us to try to get the group to disperse, and we were walking up what I call the hill. I was one of the three, I believe it was three of us, was shooting the tear gas. But I remember them trying, I think, telling us to disperse the group, and we started working our way towards the hill. And I was firing tear gas in, I think, two rounds. That was it.
So I had to gave the order to one unit commander to take his unit, which was roughly 30, 35 people, and pursue the route around Prentice Hall side of Taylor, and took the other two unit commanders around the right side, Johnson Hall side. Our plan at that point was to just follow the group, as had been done the very evening before and had been done in other civil disturbances, is to essentially follow the group and continue to split it up and see what respond to its, whatever it does.
The guard swept over the hill, past the pagoda, and went right down in the practice football field. And they stayed there for about 10 minutes, and that's what's been described as the ping pong match or the tennis match. The guardsman would shoot a tear gas canister and the student would run out, and I'd pick it up, throw it back at the guardsman, and the guardsman would shoot another one.
How far can you throw a rock? Not very far. I remember grabbing a handful of stones as I was starting to see a little better and just flinging them in the direction of the Ohio National Guard. Mind you, I was 100 yards away. I hit some students who were in front of me, and I remember students turning around and hollering, "What the hell are you doing?"
And it was at this point in time that I came down near the front ranks of the crowd, and I was waving one of these protest flags, and as I did this, some of the guardsmen got down on their knees and aimed the rifles toward me and other students. At this point, Troop G formed into a small huddle or two.
The so-called huddle that people talk about often, I'm assuming, was the huddle, which was really the officers, and there was three company commanders and a couple junior officers, myself, Major Harry Jones, General Canterbury was there. We met, and primarily at that point, it's my decision as the commander of troops what we do next. I had been in constant contact with my headquarters, and we were trying to get more tear gas, and there were some other things going on. We were getting some reports of a sniper on Johnson Hall.
They talked among themselves, first, and then the 76th Guardsmen began to retrace their steps. They seemed to be in a retreat. They marched up the hill, away from the practice field, and everybody cleared the area, and we thought, well, the guard is going back up the hill. They're going to go back to the commons. The confrontation is over.
I had an M79 grenade launcher and a 45. After I ran out of the gas, you know, and the students seemed like they were coming closer and closer, I grabbed my M79. I was holding like a baseball bat in case I needed to, you know, get somebody off me, but I didn't have to, because I didn't feel my life was in danger at that moment.
I heard a sound. I don't know what that sound was. Some have said they heard a shot. I don't know that it was a shot, but I heard something.
And I recall, like, I heard a shot off from the distance, and a fraction of a second later, it opened up. And I remember students, seemed like an awful lot of them, hitting the ground. I did not hear an order.
I didn't think that I was any real threat being 100 yards away. It didn't make a lot of sense to me. They turned and fired, and I remember hearing the bullets ricocheting off the ground before I heard the sound of the shells being discharged. I jumped on the ground, covered my head, and prayed that I wouldn't get hit. And then I did get hit, and it just felt like some very strong bee sting, you know, hitting me. And then my legs got real tense and then relaxed, and then I didn't have any feeling from the waist down.
I felt the bullet hit me in the wrist, and I heard other bullets hit the tree, and I think that the guardsmen shot at me on purpose because I was very visible and very vocal and active that day. On both sides of me, there were students out in the open. One of them, in fact, was shot through his foot, and that, ironically enough, was my roommate, Tom Grace.
I was knocked to the ground. I just found myself on the ground, and I didn't know what had happened. And I tried to lift myself up to look down at my ankle, although I was not really in any pain. It was almost as if someone had given me a body blow and just knocked me right off my feet. And I heard a voice yelling to me, "Stay down, stay down, it's a buckshot." And I looked over to my right, and there was Alan Canfora, who was my roommate.
Some fired high and some fired low. The firing went on for about 13 seconds, resulting in 4 fatalities and 9 wounded. I think what should be pointed out is of the 70 guardsmen on the hill, only 28 fired their weapons. Most of the guardsmen didn't fire. And one can imagine what would have happened if they had all fired their weapons.
It was in the open. I had nothing to shield myself from the bullets. And the firing just kept going and going and going. And it didn't seem to me that it was ever going to stop. We had no means to make it stop.
It looked exactly like a firing squad, and that's exactly what it was.
Name is John Philo, and I was a student majoring in photo illustration in the School of Journalism. After the shooting, it seemed to go on for a while. Said I ought to get a picture of this, and remember watching a guy take aim towards me. You know, you sort of locked in on that, and then deciding to take the picture, and then watching sort of through the camera, his gun go off, a bullet go through the metal sculpture out front and then hit embed in the tree or go through the tree. But I remember seeing rust, cloud of rust around that sculpture and a big hunk of bark fly off, you know. And I said, my God, this guy's using live ammunition. And I said, I got to get out of here. This is crazy. And as I turned to leave, I think I took about five steps. As I turned and walked away, to my right was the body of Jeffrey Miller, so I
immediately ran towards them. I was certainly surprised to hear shots. So again, in what had to be milliseconds, instinct said, whatever threat there was is now not a threat any longer. The students are leaving or are laying flat on the ground. There isn't anybody coming towards us. And just instinctively, again, immediately gave the order to cease fire. At the same time, there were three of us essentially that did that, Major Jones and General Canterbury, who were all, one was on one side and one was on the other. Because of the sound levels and knowing how hard it was to control people at those noise levels, we immediately did it by physically hitting a guardsman, grabbing him, hitting his rifle, whatever we could get.
People yelling at me for taking pictures and hanging around until the university closed. From that point on, from the shooting and realizing it was live ammunition, it all became very dreamlike, very slow motion.
Hey, get rid of that
camera.
Hey! Fucking camera!
What are you?
Get that fucking camera out of here.
It seems that just moments after the firing stopped, a person ran to me, who I later learned had been a linebacker on the Kent State University football team, and threw me over his shoulder and carried me through the parking lot. And I remember being carried past the body of Jeff Miller, who, as many people are aware, was shot in the face and had a terrible head wound. That's the very famous picture the body lying there with the woman kneeling over the body with the outstretched arms. As I was being placed in the ambulance, my foot was hit into either the top or the side, and it sent a real jolt of pain through my entire system. And then I remember looking down, I guess it was to my right or below me, I can't recall now, and there was a student lying next to me who had a gaping bullet hole in her neck. And then I recognized that to be a person that I had been introduced to a week earlier for the first and only time by the name of Sandy Schroyer. And The ambulance attendants attempted to give her a heart massage, and then I just remember them saying that it's no use, she's dead, and they pulled a sheet up over her head.
I was upset. You know, I felt bad, you know. There was guardsmen and Nelson crying, you know. Some of them took pretty bad, and I couldn't believe it. Right after that, I couldn't believe it, you know. Goes through your mind, was that really called for?
The majority of the people around the hill, the guardsmen who were on that hill, had been in more than one civil disturbance of some kind or another before. Glenville, Huff, there had been some disturbance in Akron, Youngstown. So, you know, we had all had some experience, and a fair amount of experience. And some of those were the more protracted ones, longer than 5 days, 6 days at a time.
The closest slain student was Jeffrey Miller. The next closest person was Allison Krause. Third furthest away was Bill Schroeder. And the furthest slain student was over 135 yards away, Sandy Scheuer, and she was on her way to class.
You've been trained for combat, essentially, and you know there's a good guy and a bad guy. There aren't good guys and bad guys in a civil disturbance. They're all good guys.
The M1 is an extraordinarily powerful weapon.
Most of those who fired, large majority of those who fired, couldn't bring themselves to shoot at somebody. They fired over their head. And that is contrary to regulation. They're taught that you either shoot the wound, but you don't fire warning shots, you don't fire over the head, because of what can happen. A bullet's not very selective once it's in the air.
It wasn't like I was a freelance journalist and said the place to be was Kent State, May 4th, 1970, you know. It was just a student, you know. Some, you know, four were killed, 12 wounded, or how many? And it was me, you know. It's like, you know, right there, the being famous and being dead was very, there wasn't too many inches separating those two, you know.
All I saw was kids falling. That's all I saw. It was a mess.
I was up on third floor of Taylor Hall, and the guard marched out to the rugby field. Then they were surrounded, well, about two sides by students. And the students started storming them, mainly from the parking lot. So the guard retreated. Or
all about how they kept shooting tear gas.
Moved back.
Well,
that was earlier. But the guard moved back to the corner of Taylor Hall. And while the students followed, and they were still storming them. But then all of a sudden, they got right by the corner and just turned around and started firing.
Oh, yeah, close the university so we can forget about our dead brothers.
They were getting stoned pretty heavy. And they were, you know, they had their arms up like this to protect themselves. And it looked like to me that they were scared. That's all, and they fired at what they think was self-defense.
I was coming from the opposite way, and I didn't even know what was happening. I was in class, and I come from the opposite way. There's one guard standing there, and I was just walking towards him, and I never seen a machine gun before in my life. And that guy pointed that thing right at me and pulled the lock back and just started going like, you know, going across like this, like he was playing G.I. Joe across the field with a loaded gun.
All the kids were just sitting down there, and they started throwing tear gas in it.
If we can't discuss our views, we might as well forget about American freedom.
First.
There's
once,
no freedom.
One State Highway Patrolman,
and if Rhodes wants
Guard.
To get elected senator, I think he better change his pig ways.
Right. He better have 10 cops for every student and shoot every student that steps out of line. Students were warned 5 different times.
Oh, you warned.
Oh,
you pig. What's the matter with you? You want to go
they
to Vietnam, Chase?
Yes.
They can throw rocks at us, and we're supposed to stand there. We're pebble. They're pebble throwers, just harassing us. That's not the way it is.
Did they throw rocks at you?
Damn right they throw rocks at
me. You came here Saturday night. I was so scared Saturday night I was going to get it. It was pitiful. We went on top of that hill when that fire was down there. I never been so scared in all my life. It looked like about 300 or 400 of them just
rocked
them back. I don't know. But you weren't up on the hill when the people were shot.
We watched them get shot.
We watched them. We were at the other room. We was looking right out the window. We was getting ready. We was all in line.
All I say was there's supposed to be a
confirmed sniper on Johnson.
How do you feel about what happened to those people?
How do I feel? I feel it's about time one of them got it like that.
Why?
I mean, I don't like to see anybody get killed, but I mean, we come up here, these people, all they do is stand around and give you a peace sign, throw rocks at you, harass you, call you dirty names.
I wouldn't shoot anybody. I hardly even load my weapon when I'm running here. Why would I want to shoot innocent kids?
It's something. You want the ones who shot
him? 2 minutes to see what they're going to come back.
You're going to find out who killed him?
The first problem is not to find out who killed anybody, but to prevent anyone else getting killed, all right? That's number one. And when that is taken care of, and
well, the students gathered back on the commons and began a protest, and the faculty marshals, including myself, were working with the students, and we were trying to figure out what to do. Some of the students were asking to stay there all night. So others were asking who did the shootings and so forth. And then the guard general began to negotiate with Glenn Frank and a couple of other marshals, and clearly indicating that the students had to leave. The guard was going to come again, and you could see them getting formed up in their movement formation to come again. And that was pretty scary, I must admit.
Approximately 12 students out on the commons right now. At 12:45, National Guard has raised guns.
A number of students at that point followed us and reformed on the backside of Taylor Hall. And at this point, that group, and I would guess not more than a couple hundred, violent, totally irrational. If there was a time that I thought there was a chance for a real confrontation that could have been catastrophic to both sides, was that point in time. The chance to forget the Vietnam and Cambodia and all those things totally are gone now, and guards off campus is gone now. It's you know, murder, killer. Get the guard, that kind of thing. I think there were some, at that point, my feeling as the commander of troops is that both sides were in a lot of trouble at that point.
March off of here, away from those men with the guns.
No! Kids,
they've got ammunition in it.
Let them slaughter us.
Hey, where are we supposed to go? Are they going to slaughter us all?
Listen, I'm scared to death. I'm scared to death that somebody else is going to get shot and killed.
Ask him now, they'll shoot us.
Man, you think Martin Luther King, he wouldn't move.
The troops are now coming over the hill right beside Taylor Hall. They're dispersing the crowd that was gathered in front of Taylor Hall. The crowd right now that's right in back of Johnson Hall is staying put. People are dispersing. Some are still sitting. Troops are coming over the hill. They're forming a line right in front of Taylor Hall. It's safe to assume right now that the entire crew right in the middle of the commons, including myself, is surrounded by National Guard troops.
And so Glenn Frank made a very famous and impassioned speech to ask the students to leave.
Please listen to me right now. I don't care whether you've never listened to anyone before in your lives. I am begging you right now, if you don't disperse right now, they're going to move in and it can only be a slaughter. Would you please listen to me? Jesus Christ, I don't want to be a part of this. Please. I'm begging you also, follow me out this way. Follow me.
She truly cared about people and life. On Saturday evening, she called home to tell me there was some trouble in the business section of Kent. She said there was some property damage and she was against that. She was not involved in that, but she felt they had to demonstrate. She felt they had to do this because there was no other way to express themselves. She resented being called a bum because she disagreed with someone else's opinion. She felt that war in Cambodia was wrong. Is this dissent a crime? Is this a reason for killing her? Have we come to such a state in this country that a young girl has to be shot because she disagrees deeply with the actions of her government? I want something to be done. What I would like to see happen is that my daughter's death and those of the other three children, as well as the wounded, not be in vain. I would like to see Congress investigate the situation and determine who authorized live ammunition to be brought.
You do have a situation of a crowd throwing rocks, and the National Guard is called in, that there is always the chance that it will escalate into the kind of a tragedy that happened at Kent State. And if there's one thing I am personally committed to, it's this. I saw the pictures of those four youngsters in the Evening Star the day after that tragedy. And I vowed then that we were going to find methods that would be more effective to deal with these problems of violence, methods that would deal with those who would use force and violence.
I felt very strongly that if there was blame, it should stop at no lower level than me. If they wanted to, that we gave the orders, we put them there. The tactics and techniques that were used were the ones we taught them, and we put them in that position. And, you know, we put them in the position where they feared for their lives.
Kenneth Gale at Kent State.
An investigator for the Commission on Campus Unrest has testified this morning that the FBI found no evidence whatsoever of a sniper on that day last May when National Guardsmen shot and killed four students.
The Scranton Commission wrote that the indiscriminate firing of rifles into a crowd of students and the deaths that followed were unnecessary, unwarranted, and inexcusable. And so there were several criminal proceedings, including a state investigation and some trials, a federal investigation of the National Guard, which led to eight guardsmen being indicted who were subsequently acquitted. And then in 1975, there was a complex civil trial where the wounded students and the parents of the slain students sued the guardsmen and sued a university official and the governor of state, Governor Rhodes. This trial ended in a 9-3 vote for the defendants, and so there's no money awards. There were several appeals, and in 1978, the trial started again. And after about 6 weeks or so, Judge Thomas negotiated a settlement in the civil trial. And basically, the core of the settlement was a financial award to Dean Kaler of $350,000, with the wounded students getting various monies at a lower rate, and then a statement of regret from the National Guard and Governor Rhodes was signed. Certainly did not admit guilt in any sense of that word. And the parents of the four slain students each got $15,000 apiece, although that was not the issue. They wanted the system to work better. The financial aspect was never an issue for them.
This program was produced at WKSU by Mark Uricki, with engineering help from Joe Gunderman, Andrew Walsh, and David Schmall. Special thanks to Dr. John Weiser, Nancy Burke, John Burnell, Bob Carpenter, and John Cheges. I'm Mark Uricki.